Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhar Sri Vasadi Gaur Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Sri Sri Radha Krishna Gopina Shai Mukunda Radha Kunda Giri Govardhana Ki Jai Vrindavan Dhamma Ki Jai Mathura Dhamma Ki Jai Navadvipa Mayapur Dhamma Ki Jai Jagannath Puri Dhamma Ki Jai Gangamaya Jamuna Devi Ki Jai Bhakti Devi Ki Jai Tulsi Maharani Ki Jai Samaveda Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai Gaur Premanande. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to the assembled devotees. All glories to Sri Guru and Gauranga. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya. Krishna Prastaya Bhutale Srimati Bhakti Vedanta Swamini Tinamane. Namaste Sarasvati Deve Gauravani Pacharne. Nirvasesa Sanyavadi Paskachade Satara. Vandeham Sri Guru Sri Yutam Padakamalam Sri Guru Vaishnavamscha Sri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunatham Vitamstam Sajivam Sadvaitam Sadvadutam Padijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Sri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Sri Vishakam Vitamscha Vanshaka Patubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyevacha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda Jai Dvaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda November 6th, 2023, at Krishna Balaram Temple in Vrindavan. Reading from Chaitanya Charitamrita, Adi Lila, Chapter 2, Text 108. And does the verse get on the board? E sabha siddhanta tumi jana bhalamate. Tabu purva pakshakara amacha laite. A. These. Sabha. All. Siddhanta. Conclusions. To me. You. Jana. No. Bala mate. In a good way. Tabu. Still. Purva paksha. Objection. Kara. You make. Ama. To me. Chalayite. To give useless anxiety. Srila Prabhupada's translation. You know all the conclusions of the scriptures very well. You create these logical arguments just to agitate me. So this is, Krishnadas Kaviraj has been making arguments that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and then he's going to say that Lord Chaitanya is Krishna, therefore Lord Chaitanya is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And so he's saying, you're making these arguments against this just to cause a disturbance. Srila Prabhupada's purport. A learned man who has thoroughly studied the scriptures cannot hesitate to accept Sri Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. If such a man argues about this matter, certainly he must be doing so to agitate the minds of his opponents. E sabha siddhanta tumi jana bhala mate. Tabu purvapaksha kara ama chalayite. You know all the conclusions of the scriptures very well. You create these logical arguments just to agitate me. So I think all of us have had scriptural and logical discussions with others. Am I correct? Yes, so there's this very nice verse in the Bhagavad Gita that ends with tusyanti cha ramanti cha. That when people talk about Krishna, they should feel what? Tusyanti means satisfied. And Rama means, Ramanticha means happy. They should feel satisfied and happy. So who has had scriptural discussions that made them feel satisfied and happy? Who's had that kind of discussion? Some of you, I feel very sorry for you. You need to get better friends. And how many of you have had scriptural discussions that just agitated your mind? How many of you had that kind of discussion also? Some of you never go online, I see. So sometimes we experience discussions about Shastra, philosophy, logic, that are enlivening. We come away from those discussions feeling like we just had a very satisfying meal. Of course, that comparison is given in the 11th canto, that when you are eating, you feel pleasure, nourishment, and relief from hunger. So when we have good philosophical discussions, we feel like that. I feel satisfied, I feel nourished, my doubts, my difficulties are relieved. We feel more enthused in our service. And then there's other discussions that we have that are simply exhausting. Am I correct? And you're like, why did I just waste an hour or 2 hours of my human form of life having this philosophical discussion with this person or these people? So wouldn't it be nice if we could have a Hare Krishna movement where our discussions were all leading to tusyanti cha, ramanti cha, instead of just agitating? What do you think? Would that be nice? All right. So we're going to look today at a little part of what's called hermeneutics. That's a Greek word. The closest Sanskrit word to this is mimamsa. The problem with using the word mimamsa is the mimamsa is also used by impersonalists and so forth. And so if you say mimamsa, there's parts of it that are not accepted by the Vaishnavas. Am I speaking slowly enough for all of the people who have English as a second, third, fourth, fifth language? Is this okay? Who would like me to speak more slowly? Anybody would like me to speak? Okay. So the GBC asked the Shastric Advisory Council some years ago to develop a system of ISKCON hermeneutics, which is how we discuss the Shastras. And we spent 3 years on that after another committee had spent 3 or 4 years. And the GBC has approved it, and we've taught it several times. And it's a big book. The whole material is like, 280 pages, Narayani, something like that. And the course that we teach, it's a 16-hour course. So I'm just going to give you a little taster today. But this is the aim, is how we can discuss philosophy and logic and scriptures so we will not do what Krishnadas Kaviraj is talking about here, simply agitating. And I'd like you to note, we'll get to this at the very end of the class, but I'd like you to note that in this verse, what important word do you see in the first line? Siddhanta. So we're going to talk about that in two different ways. And I'd like you also to note this word purvapaksha. So this word purvapaksha is very important in hermeneutics. So we're going to look at the three categories, three types of discussions, and then we're going to look at how we need to enter into these discussions. What qualities do we need to bring? And then we're going to look at Siddhanta, big Siddhanta, core Siddhanta, and then we're going to look at the hermeneutical tool to which Krishnadas Kaviraj alludes here that uses little Siddhanta and Purvapaksha. So the three types of conversations we can have are Vada, Jalpa, and Vitanda. So those of you who've studied the tenth chapter of the Bhagavad Gita, you know that Krishna says that he is Vada. He says, I am Vada. So Vada means discussions where our aim is truth, where we park our ego in the shoe room. You understand? Because that's where it belongs. Yes? Why do we leave our shoes? We have three shoe rooms here. And then there's shoes also hither and thither. Because our shoes are picking up. I was telling my grandson this. I said, don't put your dirty feet on your pillow. I said, yes, you have rudge on your feet, but you also have the dried poop of all the animals here. Yeah? All the dogs and the monkeys and the pigs and you've got their dried poop on the bottom of your feet. So therefore we park our shoes, yes? So our ego is like that. We very much like our ego. Krishna says in the 16th chapter, Ahankara Ashrita, we take shelter of our ego. But actually it's full of poop. Monkey poop, pig poop, dog poop. Yeah. So we should park that outside. And then we engage in a discussion where we're just trying to find the truth. It doesn't matter if I'm right or you're right, or I'm wrong or you're wrong, or wherever we go, we become happy. It's actually very refreshing to be in conversations like that, isn't it? When everybody has put their ego in the shoe room and we're just trying to churn the words of Guru, Sadhu, and Shastra in order to really understand their meaning and how we can apply them. Years ago in London, I had the great pleasure of visiting Krishna Dharma and Chintamani Dham, who have made it their life's intense desire to study scrutinizingly the words of Prabhupada's books. They've taken Prabhupada's instructions, studied my books threadbare to heart. And two or three times I went to their home and we were looking at every sentence of every verse and every purport. It took them 11 years to go through the Bhagavad Gita like that. But okay, what is Krishna saying here? Just trying to hear, what is Krishna saying? What is Prabhupada saying? What is Narada Muni saying? Getting my ego out of the way, what are they saying? And then how do I respond to that? What do I understand about that? And we came away so refreshed, as if we had just taken a bath in the Ganga on a hot day, with so much enhanced understanding. So that's vada. Then there's jalpa. Jalpa is, I'm not looking for truth, I'm trying to win. Yeah? So for some weeks I was having a discussion with one devotee and it was getting more and more frustrating. And finally I said to her, what do you want? She said, I want you to tell me that I am right and you are wrong. I said, fine, you're right. Actually, she was right, but that took a while. So that's jalpa. We're not interested in truth, we're interested in proving that we're right. And we will go to any lengths to prove that we are right. And those of you familiar with logic and logical fallacies, you can start recognizing when people are really attached to proving that they're right. They'll start distorting the shastra, they'll distort logic, they'll resort to ad hominem, right? Just attacking people and all kinds of things. And then there's vitanga. That sounds awful, doesn't it? Vitanga. Vitanga is, I'm not trying to find truth, and I'm not even trying to be right, I'm just trying to make you wrong. Smash and bash. I just want to prove that you are wrong. You can understand something of the gunas in these, right? Vada, Jalpa, and Vitanga. Does this remind you of something? Maybe Sattva, Rajas, and Tamas? So it can be very tempting to put aside truth. Instead of leaving our ego in the shoe room, we leave truth in the shoe room. Poor little truth. And we are trying to prove that we're right, or we're trying to prove the other person's wrong. It can be very tempting because we're very attached to our egos, right? But how refreshing it is to have vada conversations. And, you know, for a while I was teaching Raghunath Das Goswami's Srimana Shiksha, and he says that even if you're always speaking about Krishna and your actions are pakka, still, if your motives are wrong in your sadhana, in your seva, you can think you're getting clean and actually you're bathing in, anybody know? Donkey urine, which makes you feel burning inside. So these Jalpa and Vitanda conversations, we can think, I'm defending Prabhupada, I'm defending the Gaudiya Sampradaya, but we're left with this yucky feeling, yeah? And this is true whether we get pulled into a conversation with someone else who's doing Jalpa or Vitanda, or if we initiate a Jalpa or Vitanda conversation. Am I correct? So this is something to have our antenna out for. What am I looking for? Am I looking for Chushanticha or Ramanticha? Do I want to feel as if I have bathed in Gangotri? Or am I looking for Jalpa and Vitanda? Well, I will simply bathe in donkey urine, but I can think, ah, I was right. Or, ah, they were wrong. And of course, even higher than Vada, although Krishna says he's Vada, okay. But even higher is Samvada. We have Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and Ramananda Roy. We have Ramananda Samvada. So sometimes Vada can just be in Sattva. Sometimes it can be in Bhakti. Sometimes it can be just in Sattva Guru. But higher is Samvada. And the Samvada conversations, often it's between guru and disciple, but it can also be between peers, if the aim is truth. So this is the first thing to go for. If we don't go for this, everything else is spoiled. Does this make sense? No use talking about anything else if our purpose is not truth. And higher than truth is prema. If that's not our purpose, if we're not talking about Krishna and philosophy and logic in order to fall in love with those beautiful personalities there on the altar, then what is the point of anything else? All right, how are we going to do this? So we start with qualities. In hermeneutics, we teach qualities, principles, and tools. And we start with qualities. And I had one devotee tell me, oh, the qualities are not important. Just with philosophy and logic, you can understand anything. And I thought, well, we have this interesting verse in the Bhagavad Gita in chapter 13, set of verses 8 through 12, where Krishna defines knowledge, correct? And what does it start with? Humility, right? Humility, pridelessness, two ways of saying something similar. Just like when I was teaching children, sometimes the children would come up to my desk and argue with me about something in the books or, you know. And then I'd stop and I'd say, do you want to learn or do you want to argue? What is your purpose? So first has to be humility. Right? If we think we know, we cannot learn anything. If we think, oh, I already know everything. One of the many important things I learned from His Holiness Jayadwaita Swami is that unless you're God, it's perfectly acceptable to say, I don't know. And what do we know? I mean, how much can we know? Anybody here can know a lot? You know, when you get a PhD, what that means is you know a tremendous amount about a very small thing. Very, very, very small. Like, I am genuinely the world's leading expert on the job satisfaction of all the teachers in the Hare Krishna school in October of 2005. What do we know? Right? I mean, even if you know so many things. So to start with humility. And you all know we study the scriptures and we're always finding deeper and deeper things, isn't it? Yes? No matter how many times you read them, when you open it up, you're like, wow, I didn't know that was there. And I've read this 50 times. And I taught it another 50 times. And I didn't know that was there. Wow. Even Krishna is always learning more about himself. Prabhupada says Krishna is always expanding, and his knowledge of himself is always expanding. I read one time years ago that relationships die when there's no mystery. So first, humility and a service mood. I'm studying this to learn and to serve. The next quality we have is being faithful, having fidelity to the text and the tradition, not coming up with some mad interpretation. Like Prabhupada would talk about how Gandhi said, you know, Kurukshetra is the body and the Pandavas are the five senses. And it may sound very wonderful and poetic, but to be faithful, that doesn't mean that we have no individuality and we have no thought. Prabhupada says Krishna consciousness is not narrow or stereotyped, but still we have to stay within the tradition, within our acharyas, within our founder acharya, within our shastra. Sometimes we're not, like you were asking the question, right, of Anuttama Prabhu about hearing, right? Panchagoda Prabhu. And we notice that it becomes very popular to hear from who knows who about who knows what, from who knows what source. And it's always acceptable to say, oh, what's your pramana for that? You can say it humbly. You can say, oh, this is wonderful. This is wonderful. Can you please tell me where does that come from? Can you point me to the verse? Or which acharya has said this where? I once asked some devotee this repeatedly, and he kept evading. And then finally at the end of the class, he said, oh, I heard it in some little village in Vraj. So fidelity to text and tradition. And then to have a discerning search for truth. Again, this is the idea of vada. I want to find the truth even if it means that I look back. What does Shastra say? What does Krishna say? Even if it means it's not complimentary to me. You understand? Shastra says something that's going to make me look like a fool. That's okay. I want to find the truth. And then honest and authentic conversation. To be real. Actually, Srila Prabhupada generally defines dharma as that which is authentic. Like the dharma of sugar, he'll say, is sweet, right? The dharma of chili. In Govindas, they spell chili C-H-I-L-L-Y, which means cold. They serve you chili potato. So I assume they're very cold potatoes. But the dharma of chili is to be spicy, yeah? If your mouth isn't on fire, what is the point? So that's what's authentic. What's wonderful about Krishna consciousness, among many other things, is that it's authentic. That when we taste some happiness in Krishna consciousness, the way we know it's not Maya is that it had this authentic Rajavidya Rajagriyam Pavitram Idamuttamam Prachakshavagamam Dharmam Susukam Kartamagriyam. It has this authenticity to it. Yes, we've had this experience. So I give these examples all the time. Right? You'll have this pleasure in a kirtan that you can't explain just by the musical expertise. You could go to a much more musically expertise concert. But there's some happiness in that kirtan. You're getting some happiness from the shastra that you're not going to find in some ordinary book of philosophy. We're getting happiness seeing the deities. We're not going to see it in some art exhibit. It's not the material elements. And of course, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu talked about this with reference to prasadam. He said, we all know what are the ingredients. Yeah? So I had an experience in Puerto Rico. I was giving a talk at a university. And that morning, one devotee, Kamagiri Devidasi, she had made cookies. And I was in the kitchen when she was cooking for the deities when she was making the cookies or biscuits to you UK people. So I saw the ingredients. It was very simple. It was sugar, butter, flour, sodium bicarb, and a little vanilla. That's all. The most simple ingredients you could have and still call it cookies or biscuits. And I didn't get to have any of them because people were asking me questions at the end of the class. But at least 40 people out of the 120 who were there came up to me and said, can we get the recipe? And I thought, you'll be very disappointed if I give you the recipe. But what were they tasting? They were tasting something authentic. They were tasting, as Mahaprabhu said, the saliva of God, right? Something authentic. In what we taste with our, you know, tasting, smelling, hearing, touching, with our senses in the material world, on a material level, is not authentic. Actually, we're not experiencing them. We're just the witness. Krishna says this in the 5th and the 13th chapter. We're not really doing anything. It's like we're, you know, the Shastra said it's like a dream. Yeah? Have you ever eaten food in a dream? I once had a big feast in a dream when I took a little rest on a fast day. And it was, I was fasting from food and water, and in my dream I was eating pakoras. And then I thought, I'm really thirsty. And so in my dream I drank a cup of water, and then I drank another cup of water. And then I drank another cup of water. Finally in my dream I took a whole jug of water and was drinking it. And then in my dream all of a sudden I thought, something's funny. Something's funny. And then I woke up and I thought, oh, it was dream water. So our sensory experiences in this world, they're not authentic. Dharma means what's authentic. So the quality we should bring to Shastric discussions should be, we want what's authentic. We're not just looking for, you know, philosophically stimulating things. The mind is also one of the senses. And then the next quality is openness to change and transformation. Perhaps this is the most difficult, to really want to be changed, to want to be transformed. Isn't that the hardest thing? To want to be transformed. If you think about Shraddha to Prema, and you think about religious people in the world, so most religious people are just at Adushraddha. I believe in God. I'm a Christian, I'm a Muslim, I'm a Hindu, I'm a whatever. What do you do about it? Nothing. Maybe they go to church on Christmas or something. Just Adushraddha. That's easy, right? Then there's Sadhusanga. That's a little harder. Now you have to actually associate with saintly persons, which means some of your Asat Sangha is not going to want to associate with you anymore. They're going to say, you know, you're boring. So that's a little tapasya. Not very many people make that switch from Adushraddha to Sadhusanga. And then fewer people, it's like a funnel, you know, fewer people go to Bhajanakriya. Fewer people actually practice their religion. I don't know what percentage is, but it's small, correct? And then among those people who practice, not that many really practice seriously. I mean, even all these people coming, all these thousands of people, how many of them are really chanting 16 rounds, offering all their food, reading the... You follow? Smaller. All right, but still we have a lot of people in the world who practice whatever. They do their 5 times a day Muslim prayer or something. But then we have the next step to anartha nivritti. This is where you really get transformed. Because it's entirely possible to do the rituals of a religion and not get transformed, isn't it? You can do them offensively, you can do them superficially. Now what happens, like Gurujan Prabhu was saying yesterday, that if you are following, eventually Krishna will come in front of you, yeah? If we're actually following a process strictly, Krishna will reveal to us something of himself and something of how we are entangled. Have we all had this experience that we start to see things clearly? Chaito Darpana Marjanam, the dirty mirror starts to be cleaned. And when we see this, we see not only something of Krishna and something of our real self, but we also see what an utter fool and rascal we are. Am I correct? Right? When I first came to the Hare Krishna movement, I thought I was like a week or two away from being a pure devotee. I mean, one of the other brahmacharinis, she said to me, you don't really love Krishna, and I was so offended. How dare you say that? So when we do Bhajana Kriya, we start to see, I think I'm doing service, but it's all disgusting. It's all mixed up with ego. It's all mixed up with pride, with envy, with lust, with greed, with anger. Yeah? What is this thing? I'm thinking, oh, I'm doing such nice service. And then you look at it and you're like, what is this? And then one has to be willing to let it go. And that's very difficult. It's extremely difficult because our false ego wants us to think, Ishwar Ham Ham Bogi Siddham. And when we see these things, many people turn around and run the other direction. Which means either they decrease their Bhajana Kriya, or they do it very, very superficially. Either they decrease it externally, or they become very mechanical. Because if you're just chanting mechanically and worshipping mechanically, then there's no transformation that goes on. And of course, the people who are doing, in any religion, the people who are doing strict Bhajana Kriya, but not going through a transformation, are the people who give a religion a bad name all over the world. Do you follow what I'm saying? The very strict Muslims, the very strict Hindus, the very strict Christians, who don't go through this transformation, they end up having religious wars and persecution. And, you know, it's not only that the Muslims are doing this today. The Catholics did it years ago, going around the world torturing and killing anybody who wasn't a Catholic. It's a general problem, you follow? And then the materialistic person say, why do I want to be religious? Look at these religious people. They're worse than the materialists. So one has to be willing to go through transformation. One has to be willing to have our study of Shastra, our practice, change us. And isn't that what we want ultimately? Don't we want to get rid of this, all these upadis, that all they're doing is causing us grief? Don't we want to find our real self? Our real self, my dear friends, is wonderful. Srila Rupa Goswami describes the qualities of Krishna in the first 50. Also, we all have. I mean, we have them in a tiny amount, but we're tiny, so it's okay. Does anyone know any of those qualities of the soul? It's nice to know who we are. Might come in handy. We're all beautiful. We're all ever youthful. We're all geniuses. Hey, just read through those qualities. We're wonderful. That's why Krishna says, chapter 6, text 20, that when you see yourself, what will you do? You will relish and rejoice in the self. We have these words, Atma Rama, Atma Tushta, Atma Rati. Atma Rati, Rati means love. You'll love yourself. And Krishna says, then you'll think there's nothing greater than this. And you'll never be disturbed by anything. So to be open to change and transformation means to be willing to get rid of this ahankara, where we're identifying with this bag of mucus, bile, and air, and this, you know, mental construct. I am from this country, I am from this thing, I have this family, I have this. And Uttama Prabhu was talking about this the other day. Which all it's doing is causing us pain. But we are so attached to these things, yeah? I'm going to chant Hare Krishna, but I'm not going to do any transformation. I'm going to have a shastric discussion, a philosophical discussion, but how terrible it will be if I have to be transformed by it. Not knowing that we get transformed by it and we see that we are wonderful. that you be a servant, Jivara Swarupaya Krishnarini Nityadas, to be a tiny, insignificant servant, full of the qualities of God to a minute degree, is wonderful, and trying to be a false lord of the universe is simply a burden. So we have to have this quality of openness to change and transformation. And then the last quality is benevolence and generosity. We should assume that those who speak the scriptures are gurus, are acharyas, that they are full of benevolence and generosity. They are full of compassion. The scriptures don't exist to overlord or to exploit, and if we're understanding them that way, we're understanding them wrong. We should always choose the most merciful, compassionate understanding of the scriptures, because that is the mood of the Lord. Okay, so we talked about what kind of conversations, Jada, Vada, Jalpa, and Vitanda, and we talked about the qualities to bring into those conversations, humility in a service mood, being faithful to the text and the tradition, having a discerning search for truth, having honest and authentic, we talked a lot about authenticity, conversation, being openness to change and transformation, and being benevolent, having a mood of benevolence and generosity. All right, now we're going to look at one of the main principles of Shastric discussion, and we have a whole two-hour class on this when we teach hermeneutics, so this is really a little taster. But I think if you can get this, and if this is all you come away with from this class, it will really help you transform your ability to understand and discuss Shastra. And that is that every single thing that we read and hear in the Shastra, we should be comparing to the big Siddhanta. Now here we're going to talk about Siddhanta in terms of things that are universal, eternal, and transcontextual. Universal, they apply to everyone. Eternal, they apply to everyone always, past, present, and future. Transcontextual, they apply to everyone always, no matter what the context is. So every sampradaya has this list of siddhanta in a concise form. What are eternal, universal, eternal, transcontextual truths? And Srila Madhvacharya's leading disciple, Vyasatirtha, compiled a list of 10 of them. Then Baladev Vijayabhushana, who's really a link between the Gaudiya Sampradaya and the Madhva Sampradaya, he took this list of Siddhanta from Vyasatirtha and he rewrote it slightly in order to be representative of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's teaching. And then Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur took this work of Baladev Vijayabhushan based on Vyasatirtha, based on Madhva. I'm boring some of you to tears here. And he wrote his own list called Dasamula Tattva. So I'm going to just briefly go through this Dasamula Tattva. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur has a 100-page book explaining it. I'm just going to give you the list. So the first one is Amnaya, or Shastra, is the highest proof. It's the highest pramana. We accept sense perception. We accept logic as pramana. Right? We accept, I see this is a maroonish covering, that's also acceptable. But the highest truth is Shastra. Next is that Krishna is the absolute truth, which is what Krishnadas Kaviraj is talking about in today's verse. Krishna is the absolute truth. Next, Krishna has all energies. That's a very important point, which I'm not going to talk about today, but if you're interested, I refer you to Adi Lila chapter 7, which is where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is discussing with Prakasananda Sarasvati, and there you will find all of the arguments for and against impersonalism. And one of them is about whether or not God has transformed himself into the world, or whether it's God's energies that have transformed into the world. And if you have not studied Adi 7, do yourself a favor, especially if you're at all philosophically inclined, and study Adi 7. Should I tell you a tiny story about Adi 7? So I was very, very new in the Hare Krishna movement, like very, very, very new. And that book came out as a separate book before the CC was published. It was just a little book, Lord Chaitanya in 5 Features, right? Some of you remember that? So I devoured that book, Pibantiye Bhagavata Atmanasatam. I drank that book. I practically memorized it, all right? So it has all these arguments for and against impersonalism, and I was at that time 18 years old. I wasn't even initiated, I don't think. So it was a Sunday feast, and this one Indian gentleman came, this was in Chicago, and after the feast he's talking to me, and he was propounding impersonalism. So he was giving all the arguments from that chapter that the impersonalist gave, and I was able to just respond right from Prabhupada's purports, you know. And at the end of that conversation, he looked at me and he said, "You are the most intelligent person I have ever met." And I was able completely, I said, and not my intelligence. I said, "This is the intelligence of A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada." Yeah, so anyway, if you're interested in that, Krishna has all energies, I will refer you to Adi 7. Next one. Krishna is an ocean of rasa, and this particularly is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur added that hadn't been there previously. The next is the jivas are the separated parts and parcels of the Lord. The next is that the bound jivas are influenced by maya because of their tatastha nature. The next is that the liberated jivas are free of maya due to their tatastha nature. The next is the jivas and the world are both different from and identical with the Lord, which is what? Everybody? One more time. Thank you. And the last, next one is the pure devotion is the practice of the jivas. And the last one is that pure love of Krishna is the goal. So this list, which is Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Dasamula Tattva, is a statement of Siddhanta when we're talking about universal, eternal, and transcontextual truth. Does everybody follow that? This list, Shastra is the highest proof, Krishna is the absolute truth, Krishna has all energies, Krishna is an ocean of rasa, the jivas are separated parts and parcels, bound jivas are influenced by maya, liberated jivas are not influenced by maya, jivas in the world are both identical with and different from the Lord. Pure devotion is the practice of the jivas. Pure love of God is the goal. That list is true for everybody, always, at all times, in all circumstances. Clear? Okay, so you're trying to understand something from the Shastra, and you compare it to that list. For example, Krishna says to Arjuna, "Stand and fight." Is that the same as anything on that list? Is it? Is it? Yes? No? No. So is that a universal, eternal, transcontextual truth that we should stand and fight? No. We're all sitting and none of us are fighting. You follow? That statement is not a universal, eternal, transcontextual truth. Okay? That's the first category when you're studying Shastra. You say, is this statement I'm trying to understand identical with Siddhanta? And if it is, what Krishna Das Kaviraj is saying here, then you don't argue about it. That's his point. This is Siddhanta. Why are you going to the Purva Paksha, he's saying. Okay. Now, what about that statement, stand and fight? Is it a contextualization of Siddhanta? Some statements are a contextualization of Siddhanta. Let's look at one from the Bhagavatam in the 7th canto that brahmacharis should wear deer skin and matted hair. Is that a universal, eternal, transcontextual truth? No. Is it a contextualization of something that applies to everybody always? Sort of. Because, remember, we have pure devotion as the practice of the jivas. It's a in a particular context how you would practice devotion. Do you follow? Or like we have Bharat Maharaj in the 5th canto. He's chanting a certain mantra to the sun. And Srila Prabhupada writes there, in another yuga, that was the mantra. And in this yuga, we have our Hare Krishna mantra. So that's in context. Right? Pure devotion is the practice of the jivas. That's true always, but exactly how you practice pure devotion changes in the context. Or the instructions Narada gave to Dhruva to chant Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya, which we do chant, but we don't chant that as our main mantra. So if that's a universal and eternal instruction, but it's in context. But I don't think stand and fight is that either, is it? So our next category is something that supports Siddhanta. So stand and fight is like that. It supports Siddhanta. And most of the very controversial, difficult statements from Srila Prabhupada or Acharyas or the Shastra are in that category. They're not restatements of Siddhanta. They're not contextualizations of Siddhanta, but they're supportive of Siddhanta. Is everybody follow? Yeah? Okay. One living entity is food for another. That's supportive of Siddhanta. Is that true for everybody always? No. And then we have a fourth category. This is very strange. Statements that oppose Siddhanta. You might say, are there statements in the Shastra that oppose Siddhanta? Oh, definitely. Let's go to the Bhagavatam, 10th canto. Krishna and Balaram are in the wrestling arena and they've just killed all the wrestlers. And Kamsa says, take all the wealth from Krishna and Balaram and throw them out of the city. Is that Siddhanta? It's in the Bhagavatam. It's in the Bhagavatam, it's in the 10th canto. Should we do that? Should we take all the wealth away from Krishna and Balaram and throw them out of the city? What do you say? I don't think so. It's opposed to Siddhanta, you follow? Does everyone understand? Yes? And you'll say, well, that's a demon saying it. But Krishna says something opposed to Siddhanta in the Bhagavatam, in the 10th canto, to his prema devotees. What does he say? Worship work. Why are you worshiping gods? Just worship work. What can gods do for you? Okay? So when we're trying to understand, when we're having a discussion, the first thing we do is we make sure that we're looking for truth. We make sure we're having a vada discussion, not a japa or vitanda. We make sure we're going in with good qualities like humility and authenticity and openness for transformation. Once those are in place, then we say, okay, this statement, is it a restatement of Siddhanta? Is it a contextualization of Siddhanta? Is it supporting Siddhanta? Or is it opposed to Siddhanta? Then we start using hermeneutical tools. And one of these tools is alluded here by Krishna Das Kaviraj when he talks about Siddhanta and Purva Paksha. So some of you perhaps have read our latest Sastric Advisory Council paper on the Brahma Gayatri Mantra. I know it's a big paper, but it's just been published by the DBC. So there for each part, we go through this process of first Vishaya, what's the topic? Then Samshaya, what's the doubt? So the topic here is who's God? The doubt is Krishna God? Then the Purvapaksha is one viewpoint. I don't think Krishna is God. Then the Uttarapaksha is another point. Ah, Krishna is God. The Nirnaya is you choose a side. I choose that Krishna is God. And then the Siddhanta, it's a little conclusion, is we understand that these statements where Lord Shiva is presented as God or Vishnu is presented as God is again something that's supporting Siddhanta or a contextualization of Siddhanta rather than Siddhanta. Now, of course, having said that, I'm going to bring up something a little that I always find a little interesting. And of course, Krishna Das Kaviraj here does say, you can say that Krishna is a manifestation of Kshiradakshaya Vishnu. He says that's not wrong. He does say that after establishing here just the opposite. But I really like in Sanatana Goswami's Brihad Bhagavatamrita, when Gopakumar is in Vaikuntha, and he runs up to Vishnu and he says, "Gopal!" And the residents of Vaikuntha are kind of scandalized. Imagine going to, you know, King Charles and going, "Village boy!" So they're scandalized. Oh, you can't call Lord Vishnu Gopal. I know it's one of his incarnations to kill demons, but we don't talk like that here in Vaikuntha. And then there's a vada conversation, according to hermeneutical principles, that takes place in Vaikuntha. Isn't that nice? I really like that. Actually, in Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu, Shilupa Goswami, in talking about the Anubhavs, in the spiritual world, they have shastric discussions also. Isn't that nice? I think that, at least for me, I think that's nice. Maybe some of you are like, "Oh, God." But I'm like, yes. And they're having this vada discussion, and they finally, Gopakumar's side wins, you know, that it's okay to call Lord Vishnu Gopal. But I found it fascinating that the residents of Vaikuntha, they think Lord Vishnu is the avatar and Krishna is an avatar. They think like that. And if they didn't think like that, why would they be in Vaikuntha? You understand? So that was very fascinating to me, that in the spiritual world, among the pure devotees, still they have different points of view according to their different, as Lord Brahma says in Prayers to the Creative Energy, that the Lord appears in whatever form we worship him. And so those who want to see Rama supreme or Vishnu is supreme, they get to see him as supreme. Even in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, it's explained there are those who see Shiva, beyond the universe, Shiva as supreme. When the Vishnu Dutas are coming out of Vaikuntha, and Gopakumar is saying, "Who are they?" And Ganesh takes Gopakumar aside. He says, "Shh. The other devotees of Lord Shiva don't know there's a higher realm, and they don't want to know there's a higher realm. So this is a private conversation." So I thought that was very interesting. So if we want to have scriptural discussions and discussions about philosophy that are tujanticha ramanticha, where we feel satisfied, we feel happy, we feel cleansed, we feel purified, and avoid the ones that are agitating, then we should have discussions that are vada, looking for truth, not jalpa and vitanda, not trying to win or trying to smash. We should go into these discussions having cultivated good qualities like humility and openness for transformation. Then having done that, we should understand what is the siddhanta of our sampradaya, and we should be able to compare whatever we're studying to that ultimate siddhanta. And then we should be able to look at things with hermeneutical tools like this one, where we have what is the topic, what is the doubt, what are two sides, what sides do we choose, and how do we come to a conclusion. Then if we do that, I think it will be very easy to have people want to join our society. Wow, this is a society where all of the discussions are full of enlightenment. Maybe not all, we'll never get to all. There's always going to be some outliers. But where we gradually have some culture in our movement of these type of discussions. And where those of us who have this kind of culture, when discussions are going another way, we say, "Oh, I think I have an important call I have to attend to. Excuse me. I think I need to leave." So thank you very, very much. There's a Sanskrit verse which I someday will memorize that goes, anything that was good and valuable here is due to my guru, and anything that was bad here was due to me. Please take the good and put aside the bad. So if any questions, comments, Pancha Gota Prabhu. Questions, comments, additions, subtractions, chastisements.
It seems like in Braj, they don't like to discuss too many details and too much thinking, you know, philosophy and logic and reason, and fill their heads with all these things. They don't just love Krishna in a very cowherd-like and peaceful way. It seems a little complicated with your offering there.
I see. Well, Krishnadas Kaviraj said we shouldn't avoid logic. And I don't know, I was really enlivened reading in Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu that the residents of Vraj discuss Shastra in the spiritual world. I was like, wow, there's actually a place for me there. I mean, everyone has their different tastes. But if we don't discuss Shastra, then we're going to get off track, you know? It doesn't take much to get off track. It really doesn't. I mean, I usually give this analogy in a different context, but when you have two parallel lines, one only has to deviate 1 millimeter, or a half of a millimeter, or a fourth of a millimeter, and it's all the way over there. You know, if I mean, all right, fine, if you just love Krishna, but be careful. Because if we really love Krishna, we want to please him. And how are we going to know how to please him without Shastra, without Guru? It's so easy to think you're going the right way and end up someplace else. It's just so easy. And then to think, how did I get here? I mean, why would our acharyas who lived in Vraj, like Srila Rupa Goswami, why did he write the Bhaktirasamrita Sindhu? Such a detailed work of explanation, what is and is not proper. In the end of the Northern Ocean, he has all of these explanations of, you know, you can have a perversion in your sthaibhav, you can have a perversion in your anubhav, you can have a perversion in any of the 5 categories of bhav. And then instead of rasa, you get rasabhasa. You know, if you're not careful, we were putting things away the other day, my grandson and I, and he said, Grandma, should I label the salt? And I said, you always label the salt. He said, you can tell by looking at it. I said, you always label the salt. Right? Haven't we done that? Use salt instead of sugar? And then you don't get rasa, you get ras abhas. You get a shadow of rasa. You don't get taste. It's so easy. Why would Raghunath Das Goswami, our Prayojanacharya, sitting at the bank of Radhakund, why would he write Manashiksha? Why would he talk about a donkey urine bath? He said, you think you're getting clean. You think, I'm getting clean in bhakti. And you're actually bathing in donkey urine. And Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur details all the ways you can think you're on the right path and you're not. So I would say a little humility never hurt anybody. You know, Satyananda Maharaj told me years ago, he said, Armila, always think you're a beginner. Yeah, be a little humble. I need to study the works of the acharyas. I need to study the shastra. You know, I'm not so great, I'm not so wonderful that I can just go by my feelings. So, I hope is that all right, Panchagota Prabhu? All right. Okay, we have a question on this side. We want to go here first. All right. Yes.
Hare Krishna. About the Vada.
Yeah.
The thing that helps me with that is to always apply the austerity of speech where Krishna says truthful, pleasing, beneficial. Not agitating others and study of spiritual scriptures.
Excellent.
If I apply that first, it's a lot easier to follow that.
Excellent. Very good point. Thank you. I love those 5 austerities of speech. And the most important one there is beneficial. We had something over here. If the mic could travel. Thank you. Yes.
Is it possible to create a political party for residents and kind of government?
Is it possible to create a political party for the... For what in the countries? I couldn't understand what it's for. What political party for government?
Is it possible to create a Krishna political party?
Yeah, Prabhupada wanted one. He wanted the In God We Trust political party. Yeah, well, Krishna wants devotees in all four varnas. Yes, absolutely. Krishna wants Rajarshis. Krishna wants devotees, not only devotee scholars and philosophers, Krishna wants, also wants devotee politicians. I think that's what the whole Bhagavad Gita is about. I think the whole Bhagavad Gita is about having devotees in government. And then Krishna wants devotees in business. Wouldn't it be nice if Monsanto was run by devotees? Whoa! And Krishna wants devotees in the arts and in the supportive and in the crafts. Krishna wants devotees everywhere. So yes, but Prabhupada actually wanted an In God We Trust political party. Yes. Yes, we had something over here? Yes, Prabhupada.
Mother Jiva mentioned the three types of discussions. So, Bala is in mode of goodness. Now, and the qualities that you mentioned, like a person is humble, has a desire to serve, and then he is searching for the truth.
Yes.
There is a desire to transform himself.
Yes.
And then there is a desire to give to others.
Yes.
Now, if you see these qualities, they are already present in mode of goodness.
Okay.
Now, what I see is, like, there are people outside who are not devotees, and they have these qualities, and they are genuinely trying to seek the truth. When they have a proper discussion, they are some scientists.
Definitely.
And they are very genuine people. And because they are in mode of goodness, they have these qualities.
Yes.
And then I see the devotees, they don't have these qualities. They are arguing, they go to outside, they catch somebody trying to explain and argue. Now I see the difference is the Shraddha is not there. But wherein devotees, there is something called that Sukriti, they have that Shraddha, which is not there. So it's not just goodness, I'm feeling, because the quality of goodness is not there in devotees. That's why I'm seeing that they are not able to go with Samvada or Vada. They are going for Vitanda and then.
So you're appreciating the devotees who are in Rajas and Tamas because they're devotees.
I'm feeling that there is another factor that is influencing. That is, the Sukriti they have and the Shraddha they have, which is not there in people outside.
Well, that's why the Shastra says that non-devotees have no good qualities. But Shastra also says, Lord Kapila says, you can do bhakti in tamagun. Please don't do that. He says you can do bhakti in... Now, this last one? Okay. He says you can do bhakti in tamagun, in rajagun, in sattvagun, in transcendental. Please, can we try to be transcendental? I mean, it's nice to appreciate a devotee who's doing bhakti in tamagun as opposed to a materialist in sattvagun. That's nice. Shastra also appreciates. But please, can we come at least to sattva, please? 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 I'm talking to myself too. Please, Urmila, come at least to sattva. And try to be transcendental to the modes of nature. Krishna really pushes this in the Bhagavad Gita. Doesn't he? Early on in the Bhagavad Gita, yeah? People tell me, oh, this is only for very advanced devotees. I said, I don't know. Bhagavad Gita is a beginning book. And even in the beginning. Where is that verse, Narayani, where Krishna says, rise, the Vedas mostly deal with the modes of material nature, become transcendental. 247. Chapter 2 of the Bhagavad Gita. Couldn't remember if it was 2 or 3. Thank you. Yeah, there you go. Thank you. Beginning book, beginning chapter. Let's do that. Let's do that. And I'll end with this little story. So many years ago here in Vrindavan, I met this gentleman in his 60s or 70s. He was a Christian monk, lived with one little backpack, traveled the world with less luggage than I have. I was envious. And he was a former dentist, and he traveled the world giving free dental care. And he had helped some devotees in America who told him about Vrindavan. So he came here to give free dental care to the poor people in Vrindavan. So he attended my lecture in Prabhupada's room on Bhagavad Gita, and he bought Prabhupada's Bhagavad Gita. He told me all this, and he said that he was sitting here, like right over there, reading the Gita, and he was a Catholic monk. And the way he had been taught in the monastery, you study Shastra, is you read a little bit, and then you put the book down. You got this? You put the book down. You got this? You put the book down, and then you think about what you read. So he had the Bhagavad Gita, and he was reading something, and he put the book down. You understand? To think about it. So one brahmachari comes up to him and says, "You cannot put this book on the floor." He said, "I'm sorry, I was just studying." "You have to get the book off the floor." And he's screaming at him for like 10 minutes. And then this man told me, he said, so I gave him my Bhagavad Gita. I said, "I think you need this more than me." So let's not be like that, please. Thank you. All glories to Srila Prabhupada.